Chris Christie's response as to what he knew about Bridgegate, denying. What will President Obama speak about on Friday? Spying. And continuing to bring you a great political show week after week? Believe me, I'm trying. From WAMU 88.5 in Washington, I'm Ken Rudin, and this is The Political Junkie.
You like Ike, I like Ike, everybody likes Ike.
For president.
Add Ike to you, add Ike to me, I don't care how you quote it.
Come on and vote for Kennedy, vote for Kennedy, and we'll come out on top.
Vote for Richard Nixon and Henry Cabot Lodge, cause they're the ones to lead the USA.
Thanks for joining us and welcome to Episode 11, the Bridge to Nowhere edition of The Political Junkie. Chris Christie may have fired his deputy chief of staff over Bridgegate, but is the worst over for the New Jersey governor and 2016 presidential wannabe? We'll talk with Republican consultant Mike Murphy about the extent of the damage. And later in the show, we'll visit Iowa to get a snapshot with Des Moines Register pollster Ann Selzer. But first, a trivia question. Ed Gillespie, the former chairman of the Republican National Committee, is expected to announce his candidacy this month for the Senate seat currently held by Virginia Democrat Mark Warner. Who was the last former National Party chair, Democrat or Republican, who after his term was over ran for the Senate? Send your answer to Ken at KenRudinPolitics.com. We'll select a winner at random from the bunch. The winner will get a fabulous vintage Political Junkie button personalized by me. Again, that's Ken at KenRudinPolitics.com. Last week's trivia question was, when was the last time a major party candidate was running for president the same year as a college football team from his home state won the title? I think anyone who even understood that question deserves a prize. Actually, many did know what I was talking about, surprisingly. The answer was 1980, when President Jimmy Carter was seeking re-election and Georgia won the national championship. And the randomly chosen winner was Colin Chipron of Northville, Michigan. Colin gets that fabulous button. Before we get to the Garden State and my former hometown of Fort Lee, a quick look at some of the week's headlines. Republican voters on Tuesday picked a nominee for the special election to fill the seat of longtime Congressman C.W. Bill Young, who died last year. The special election is in March. We'll talk more about that next week. And President Obama is expected to make a major address on Friday about proposed changes in the National Security Agency procedures on surveillance. It's been a hellish week for New Jersey Governor Chris Christie. A landslide re-election winner in 2013 made him the nation's dominant Republican figure. And by becoming the new chair of the Republican Governors Association, he had a role that presumably was going to help him in the early maneuvering for 2016. But the release of emails from Christie loyalists seemed to show an administration bent on retribution and pettiness. Mike Murphy is a longtime Republican strategist who is too smart to think that anyone could really be a frontrunner for 2016 at this stage of the game. Mike, welcome to The Political Junkie.
It's good to be here, Ken.
Well, Chris Christie. How's that for a question?
Yeah, well, he doesn't do anything small. I kind of take the view that, one, as you said in your intro, we have this kind of crazy funhouse mirror thing where he's front runner, now he's dead. And I think he's neither. I think he is a credible candidate for the nomination because he can raise a bunch of money, and he's proven that if you turn him loose on voters, he's popular. I mean, he's done really well in a tough state. I used to work for Christine Todd Whitman there. Jersey is no paradise for Republicans, and he's had huge political success. So I think the fundamentals that make him, a shortlist candidate credible for the nomination are still there. The question is, will this get worse for him? And I would define really worse as we find out that in his press conference he was misleading us. I doubt that is true because, one, I believe him. Two, I don't think he's nearly stupid enough to have been involved in something like this because it's pure stupidity. But the question is, what will rub off on him? Because there's a staff culture there that's very aggressive. I will say from my experience in New Jersey, I am far from shocked that there's feuding and rough and tumble politics in the Garden State, because that is not a surprise to any of us in either party who've worked anywhere near New Jersey.
But, these were supposed to be Christie loyalists. I mean, they were not supposed to be independent operators who owe their livelihood to Chris Christie and seemed loyal to them. But here's the thing. Chris Christie was supposed to be different. He wasn't, you know, the blow-dried politician with the rehearsed lines. He was real. He was genuine. He was no nonsense. He was Reagan-esque, they used to say, or some would say that.
And, well, he was kind of the anti-politician at the time people hate politics, which was, is, and remains, I think, his great strength. This is a political, you know, scandal of kind of standard bad behavior. So does that undermine his image? And I think it'll come down to, do people think he knew? I don't think he did. And two, how he conducts himself in the next 90 days as he tries to move beyond this thing. And three, what else do we find out about the staff and the culture there?
Whether Chris Christie was involved, personally involved or not, and there's no evidence to indicate that he was, the most widely used description I've seen of him has been bully. And so, again, whether it was he or his administration, it comes, the tactics come off as bullying. So you know, punishing officials who didn't endorse him, lecturing reporters and teachers or anybody who contradicts him, that's not... I mean, I don't know what Iowa and New Hampshire and South Carolina are looking for anymore, but he is not a cuddly politician.
No, he's not, but that might be his secret sauce. I mean, we've got a very PC, very postmodern press, and so, you know, the two worst words in the world in that area are bullying or judge anybody. So, oh, my God, he's a bully. I think out in voter world, a bunch of people kind of like his bullying sort of personality and a less pejorative use of bullying. Just the fact that he kind of cuts through and he's blunt and bluster. I think other people may find it really, you know, off-putting. We just have to have a campaign to prosecute all this and find out. But there was a great tweet from Nate Silver about never underestimate the media's ability to try to predict a scandal the voters will care about in 3 years. And I think this is a prime case. You know, the thing is not fully litigated yet, but it could be if Christie is not personally involved and people find out that shock, 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 a bunch of political hacks in New Jersey, Christie hacks versus who else, we don't really know, were feuding and doing incredibly stupid things, they're going to be irritated of it, but not that surprised. It sounds like politics. So I think we'll know a lot more in 3 or 4 months. My instinct is if Christie's story from his press conference holds up, he'll be able to move beyond this and be a credible and strong candidate for the nomination. Will he win? He had obstacles before. But we tend to be kind of like a mono-channel audio system in this discussion because it's always Christie either has to be the inevitable president or dead. That seems to be the two storylines.
Right, 2 years in advance, right?
Right, 2 years in advance, which is insane, just like early polls are insane.
Right.
You know, every scandal has to be, quote, deadly until it's not. And there's this love of easy narratives. Well, if he's Mr. Good because of bluster, then he's also a bad bully. I mean, I think it's a big complicated mix of things, and we just don't know yet. And they're all going to have bumps along the road. This is that, as you well know, presidential campaigns are about lots of new information, good and bad, kind of being cooked through a long, grueling process. And then the voters in the early states, at least, get to really look at them and figure it out. So I think everybody ought to kind of calm down and see. And clearly the one new factor, well, maybe not that new, is the Democrats on a partisan basis are totally weighing in, which shows me they still think he's quite a threat.
You talked about like past scandals. And of course, it reminds me what some Nixon defenders said during 1973 and 1974. Nobody drowned at Watergate. But there are some Republicans who say, look, at least he took responsibility. You know, he owned up to it, whereas President Obama didn't, for Benghazi, for the IRS, for NSA. Is Bridgegate, or whatever you want to call this, is that comparable to any of these Obama so-called scandals?
Well, you know, we don't know all the Bridgegate stuff yet because we're not quite deep enough into all the staff. But, you know, that'll all get litigated, and then we'll know for sure. I do think there's a big style difference because Christie ran out to kind of grab it and apologize and take responsibility. That's just something President Obama doesn't like to do. So I think the contrast there is going to help Christie because we're still waiting for President Obama, I think, frankly, to cut down on the adverbs and take a little responsibility. And I'd like to hear more direct sentences.
Your bottom line on Chris Christie?
He was an A-list candidate, but not the front runner before. He is probably an A-list candidate and not the front runner afterward. This will dent him, but he has the tools, if he's not personally involved in this, as we find out, to go out and litigate a campaign pretty successfully. So I think those who write Christie off now are making a big mistake.
Mike Murphy is a Republican consultant who has worked for John McCain, Jeb Bush, and other candidates. He's a partner at Revolution Agency, a political consulting firm. Mike, thanks so much.
Thank you, Ken. It was fun. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Mike. So how is Chris Christie and other potential White House hopefuls playing in Iowa? We'll talk to Ann Selzer, the pollster for the Des Moines Register. Stick around.
Don't you know these days you pay for everything?
It's time for This Day in Political History. Carol Moseley Braun was never going to get the Democratic nomination for president in 2004. A woman and an African-American, she had little organization, little money, and little establishment support. But she wasn't supposed to be elected to the U.S. Senate in 1992 either. In any event, it was on this day in 2004 that Braun announced she was ending her campaign. Here's former Senator Braun talking about what she tried to accomplish.
All politics comes from a climate of public opinion about the issues. That climate of opinion is created from the attitudes and dispositions of the whole of the community. And I like to say that a climate of opinion is just like any other weather system. It depends on the hot air rising from the ground. What my experiences made clear to me was that the American people, whether they will actually vote for a woman candidate for president or not, believe that women have a right to be treated as equals in the political arena.
It was on this day in 2004 that Carol Moseley Braun, the first and only black woman ever elected to the Senate, ended her bid for president. We're still 2 years away from the kickoff of the 2016 presidential calendar, the Iowa caucuses. Ann Selzer is the president of Selzer & Company, a public opinion research firm in Iowa, and the pollster for the Des Moines Register. Whether she wants to or not, Ann is going to be a recurring visitor to the Political Junkie, offering snapshots of the mood of this key state from now until January of 2016, after which nobody will ever want to talk to her again until the 2020 campaign starts. And with that very positive introduction, thanks for coming on the show.
You're welcome, I think.
Listen, I was struck by something you had in your poll last month. It indicated that Iowa voters, they preferred a person with experience in business to a politician. 37% said business experience. But here's the other stuff that I was interested in. 31% said a governor, and only 19% said a member of Congress.
But you know, Ken, that really shouldn't be terribly surprising. I look at the interest in having someone outside of politics, somebody in business, as we want something else. We have seen people from Congress. We have seen governors run. Really, we want something else. And that Congress is the lowest, it matches up exactly with where their approval rating is.
Now, I agree with that, and it doesn't surprise me either. But in the next sentence, the most popular Republican in your poll is a member of Congress, Paul Ryan.
It is Paul Ryan. But we didn't test anybody, really, who is outside of politics completely. So that's a little bit of a we created that to be that way.
But now the thing is, Paul Ryan, of course, was Mitt Romney's running mate and has, you know, everybody knows him from that. But he was also the guiding force behind a budget deal that conservatives were not especially wild about. Does his role in the budget deal play in your calculations?
Well, I think it does. And I think it plays well, better, perhaps, with people who want problems to be solved. Our numbers in that poll were among all Republicans. It wasn't just likely caucus goers. And as you know very well, that's a very special sub-population. But overall, across the Republican Party, I think what it signals is that people are looking for a candidate who will put a budget out there, who will sort of tackle the things that need to be tackled. The mood in Iowa is for somebody who's ready to do that. His numbers with Republicans were just stellar. 73% had a favorable opinion, just 10% an unfavorable opinion.
We were talking about the differences between preferring a member of Congress and a Washington Beltway type and a governor. Well, Chris Christie happens to be a governor. What are you hearing about him, and especially in the wake of the so-called Bridgegate scandal?
Well, let me first say that I think people were a little surprised that he didn't do better in our poll. His favorables were 44%, his unfavorables 29%. That put him behind, obviously, Paul Ryan, Jeb Bush, Rick Perry, Marco Rubio, Scott Walker. He has a story, he has a case to be made here in Iowa. I think, however, he, again, has a potential appeal beyond Republicans. And if you remember how Barack Obama won the Iowa caucus, he won it with independence and going out and getting new people to come. And Chris Christie seems to be the kind of person who could do it. As to the Bridgegate, what I hear Republicans saying is, you need no better example of why they sparked a Chris Christie as a different kind of Republican than his press conference performance and then the performance of his surrogates on the Sunday show. So at his press conference, the governor was articulate. He was in command. He was apologetic. It was authentic. And every one of the surrogates who went on the Sunday show that I saw were all trying to change the subject in the same particular way. And it's that kind of thing, a denial that there's a problem. You know, if they're saying, well, it's just like this, it's just like this, it's just like this, what do they mean? This is no big deal? This Bridgegate is no big deal? People kind of, again, look at the authenticity, because Chris Christie thought it was a big deal and said so.
The polls show that Chris Christie does very well with independents. But as you correctly point out, there's a big difference between the independents who vote for a Republican candidate in November and the Republicans who show up at the caucuses. How do Iowa conservatives feel about Christie?
I can't tell you exactly there. You know, the Republican Party of Iowa is right now being run by people who were Ron Paul supporters. So in Iowa, you're sort of getting this crossroads of what's happening with the Republican Party, with those very strong, almost libertarian, very small government, very anti any foreign engagement, with the more moderates. I think with the more moderates, Chris Christie looks pretty good. Moderates, as we know, are hard to persuade that it's worth their time to come out to a caucus, but it can be done. Mike Huckabee won the caucus with 40,000 votes. Santorum and Romney split it around 39,000 votes apiece. It's not that high a bar. You can go out and find enough Republicans to come if you're so inclined. So I think the question is, if Chris Christie is not particularly liked by the Iowa Republican Party, maybe he's going to get less help there. Could he on his own put together the kind of organization that he would need to pull out those moderates and those people who would, in fact, lead him to the nomination?
You mentioned Mike Huckabee. You mentioned Rick Santorum. They did pretty well in your poll, but they're not really talked about that much nationally. Are they, or is anyone organizing in Iowa yet?
Nobody's organizing yet, but they're visiting the state. So
coincidentally.
Coincidentally. They're not exactly knocking on doors, but when they're invited to come and talk, and they may be initiating those invitations themselves, you know, they're happy to get some face time here.
On the Democratic side, Hillary Clinton is the apparent overwhelming frontrunner, though we probably said that about her 2 years before the 2008 elections. Anyway, does she appear as strong in Iowa as she does nationally?
Well, her favorability numbers among Democrats surpassed Paul Ryan, and his were very strong. So she had 89% of Democrats saying they felt favorably toward her. I think the trick is that Iowans have a long memory, and they know that that wasn't enough the last time around. And again, that's a lesson to all the candidates, that you have to work Iowa. You can't just show up at the last minute. And the work that you do has to be the kind of work that will get you actual votes. And she had not had experience with the caucus because Bill Clinton did not campaign with the year that he was nominated because Tom Harkin, our U.S. Senator, decided to get into the race. So until you've had caucus experience and see what that is and what it takes to get people out and what we'd like to think is a mid-January or late January night and not January 2nd or 3rd, it all depends on how you approach the state, how you put your organization together.
I mean, nobody can speak for her because there's no real Hillary Clinton campaign yet, but the word out there is that she learned from her mistakes in 2008, especially what happened in Iowa.
You know, she's got a big hill to climb up because while she starts with a good feeling among the Democratic base, there will be the old stories, the old battle scars that she's going to have to face up to and deal with all over again, perhaps in a fresh way, so that people see her as a fresh, new kind of candidate, a fresh voice.
Do you see any clamoring for, among Democrats for another candidate, a Brian Schweitzer, a Martin O'Malley, somebody like that?
They are virtually unknown here. We tested them, 70%, not sure. They don't know enough to say anything about either potential nominee at all. So it's really hard to make anything out of their favorability numbers when the not sure is that high. They're just unknown. Brian Schweitzer was just here. I think O'Malley has something coming up, so we threw them on the list.
Schweitzer, of course, the former governor of Montana, and O'Malley, the governor of Maryland, right?
You're absolutely right. I'm sort of shorthanding it already as though everybody knows. But the trick is that there are a lot of candidates who were unknown and went on to win the caucus. I mean, Mike Huckabee was a perfect example. He was friendly with our governor, and so he'd been to the state, but not in any sort of candidate role at all. So it all starts in Iowa, a small state, kind of for the reason that it's a place where someone who is unknown can get a foothold, become known, make their case to the people, and then move on from there.
Ann Selzer, it's January of 2014. We're 2 years out. What's the message coming out of Iowa right now?
Well, the message is that people are tired of the squabbling. They're tired of things not getting done. Our own state legislature here ended up the session last year with a remarkable series of bills passing. And I think people are starting to feel that government can work if they want to, and they wish for government to work.
Ann Selzer is the president of Selzer & Company, a public opinion research firm in Iowa. She will be appearing regularly on The Political Junkie. Thanks a lot, Ann.
All right, Ken. Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Iowa, it's a beautiful name when you say it like we say it back home.
That's it for this week's show. Political Junkie is made possible by the generous folks at WAMU 88.5 here in Washington and PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. For bonus Junkie content, bad jokes, scuttlebutt puzzles, and extended podcast content, you can visit us on the web at kenrudinpolitics.com. Also, let me know if you'd like to be on our weekly mailing list. Don't forget to send your comments, questions, and cash to ken at kenrudinpolitics.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Ken Rudin and on Facebook. Our engineer is Jonathan Cherry. Our producer is A.D. Quigg. I'm Ken Rudin in Washington. Thanks for listening. See you next week.
It's the picnic grounds and the whippoorwills call. Acorns and dew on the lawn. It's the county fair and the odd fellas hall. Meeting the circus at dawn. Iowa, it's a beautiful name when you say it like we say it back home.